Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I never put much thought into tires in the past. The thought was always to drive what comes on my vehicle, and if I had to replace them, I made my decision based on price. Our friends at Cooper Tires know what they're talking about. Cooper has been an American company since 1914, with more than a century in the tire industry. Each Cooper Tire undergoes rigorous testing and are backed by warranty, so you can trust that they'll last for thousands of miles. The Coopers pride themselves on good merchandise, fair play, and a square deal. Always have and always will. Don't overpay or underbuy. Cooper Tires do what tires should do and cost what tires should cost. All Cooper Tires are backed by a limited warranty, a 45-day test drive warranty, and select products are backed by treadwear mileage warranty, helping to give you confidence on the road. For complete product and warranty details, please visit www.coopertires.com or www.coopertires.ca. And remember, go with the Coopers. Welcome back to the Crash Course Podcast, joined by DJ Pihowski today. DJ, what is up, buddy?
Not much is up, Cody. Thrilled to be back. Don't think I've done one of these in a little while. I'm happy. I've played very little golf comparatively to my previous years in this job, but I'm happy to talk about a couple of the courses that I have played.
What are we talking about today?
Today we're going to be talking about the Lynx at Lawsonia, specifically the Lynx course. They do have two golf courses there, but the more famous one is the Lynx course up in Green Lake, Wisconsin, about 2 hours or so northwest of Milwaukee, about 2 hours and 45 minutes or so from Chicago. If you're looking for a little bit of placement, fairly in the middle of nowhere, but a place that is, I will be the 800th person to say this, absolutely worth the drive. It is such a awesome golf course.
So what's the story on it? I mean, first of all, before we get to the actual golf, how did you get turned on to this?
I got turned on to it very luckily by the guy that I ended up playing with, which is Andy Johnson, the Fried Egg. He has done probably more to publicize this golf course than anybody. And a lot of that, the reason behind that is because of a couple different things. One, it's this really great illustration of what makes golden age architecture, golden age architecture. We can get into a lot of that stuff, but two, like many of the golden age courses, I think it kind of fell not necessarily into disrepair or anything like that, but you saw a lot of stuff. This is kind of, you know, secondhand according to Andy and some of the reporting and stuff he's done. But I think you saw a lot of what makes this golf course kind of slowly slip away over the last, you know, 40, 50, 60 years. And that's things like seeing, you know, trees getting out of control, seeing greens shrinking up, all kinds of things like that. And it sounds like really over the last like 10, 11, 12 years, they've done a really good job of focusing on bringing some of that back. And some of that was specifically, I think, Craig Haltom and Oliphant Golf, which took over the property in 2010, and has just been working to take out a ton of trees, expand a lot of those greens, and really show off what makes this place special, which is really, I would say, kind of the scale and the land movement and the green complexes, which I know are three fairly well-worn cliches when you're talking about golf courses. I mean, I think those are pretty easy phrases to kind of use as like throwaway crutches. But in the case of Lawsonia, they ring really, really, really true. And the first one is probably the scale. And I think what you see at Lawsonia is really what happens when you have a great piece of land and you commit to kind of the tree removal, tree management type stuff, because you get out there and, I mean, Andy does a good job of explaining this on his website, the Fried Egg. And, you know, I'm not going to make any comparisons to like somewhere like Shinnecock or something like that. But when you get out there and you see the scale of this property and you see how bold everything is and how dramatic it is and how vast it is, like, honestly, that's kind of what comes to mind. And what's crazy about it is the fact that it's never going to cost you more than $100 to go walk it. You can probably walk it for as little as $40 sometimes on like a twilight rate. And it's just it's a really unique, like pretty one of a kind place. I have not seen many like it.
So where does the Shinnecock comp come from? Obviously incredible vistas. You have a pretty wide open plot of land, and I'm sure that the fescue and blowing in the wind is part of what's bringing back those memories of it, but I'm sure it doesn't end there either.
No, I think it's weird. It's just this feeling that you get when you play golf courses that were designed in a certain age and focused on a certain thing. And I think what's cool about that is, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter if you're in Wisconsin or if you're in, you know, Long Island. Like there, you tend to see this when you're standing on the tee box, looking out at the golf hole and kind of trying to navigate your way around, you end up seeing a lot of the same notes and a lot of the same challenges. And at Lausonia, like that's kind of the feel that you get. I mean, it's massive. I know I've mentioned that a couple times, but like we played it all the way back. So maybe that's why a lot of this is sticking in my mind. And Andy hits the ball a lot further than I do. So I'm sure it was a much easier day for him than it was for me. But you get out there and the place is just, it's just sprawling. And it's a really big piece of property, but it doesn't feel like a ass-kicking walk or anything like that. It's just a really great place to spend an afternoon. And the lake, Green Lake, is kind of right over the hill. You get a couple little tiny peaks at it. I know they can only take down so many trees, especially they can't really take down trees that are not part of their property, but it would be cool to get a couple more looks at the lake because it is right nearby. But it's wild, man. It's just this kind of shocking piece of land. And really, you see a lot of this like as you're driving through in that part of Wisconsin. I mean, it is big rolling hills, and the landscape is a lot more dramatic. I won't say severe, but like a lot more dramatic than people probably realize when they think about Wisconsin. I think they probably think of a lot of really flat farmland, and it certainly has that as well. But you saw it a little bit at the US Open at Erin Hills, which is, you know, not super far away, and the land is pretty comparable. Like there's these little kind of ravines, and it's nothing dramatic like you're going to see, you know, out west or anything like that. But Langford and Moreau do such a good job of using the movement that they have to really create these super, super special golf holes. And then beyond that, what they do such a good job at and what they're probably the best of their era at was using the steam shovel and just making these like outrageous man-made green sites and drop-offs and runoffs and ravines and all kinds of stuff. And it's one of those places when you walk around, you're like, wow, that looks really cool. And then when you really stop and think like, holy shit, they made this in the late 1920s, 1930, with a steam shovel and probably some horse and plow type stuff. Like you gain a whole new appreciation for how cool it is.
It's incredible. When we talk about golden age architecture and people think about, oh, we need to bring more of this back, and why don't they design the courses the same way that they used to? And they completely usually forget or gloss over the fact that like these dudes were doing it by hand.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the amount of grit, determination, backbreaking hard work goes into like creating some of these green complexes and tees and bunkering across the majority of the United States by hand? They didn't have power tools until the steam shovel came in. And I think what you see at Lausonia is an absolute masterclass in using new cutting edge technology at the time into golf course architecture.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say, is it seems like a lot of not only just kind of like sheer determination and willpower, but also like creativity and a lot of figuring out how to get it done. And I think the most famous example of that at Lausonia is the seventh hole, where, you know, it's this downhill par three, kind of down into a ravine, but the green comes back up and almost is like a, you know, it's not a volcano hole, but it kind of falls off all on one side. And the way that they achieved that was literally burying a boxcar underneath the green. And so if you think about all the dirt that they would have saved by, you know, with the volume of the boxcar, not having to fill that in, it's, I don't know. It's just these like really creative solutions to these little problems all over the golf course. And that makes it, you know, that makes it really cool. If you're looking to go kind of that next level down, that's the stuff that makes it really, really interesting. And I think what's also cool is like, you know, Lawsonia seems like it's not a place that I am overly familiar with. I mean, I grew up, you know, a couple hours away, like an hour and a half west of Chicago. And it was never somewhere that was on my radar when I was a kid or anything like that. And I think what's interesting is like they seem like they've really leaned into kind of telling the story and highlighting the right stuff and being excited about the right stuff. And that's got to be really gratifying when you have a place that's been around for that long, that's seen probably that many different owners and that many different regulars and that many different vacationers and all that kind of stuff. When you really start, like, it's got to be kind of scary, I would think, to commit to like, all right, let's take out a bunch of trees and hopefully people will understand what we're doing, right? When you're thinking about going to vacation out on like this lake resort, you're not really thinking about bulldozing trees. That seems kind of at odds with people's relaxation and being out at among nature. But obviously, I think, you know, we've talked a lot on this podcast and others about why that makes a golf course play much more interesting and why it's so cool for places like this. And so where I'm going with all this is like the validation of making those moves and then seeing people get really excited about them. And then kind of, it just becomes like people talk about vicious cycles, but this is almost like a positivity cycle, right? Of people like Andy discovering it and publicizing it and having, you know, his followers go out there for events and for bachelor parties and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's a really cool, it's just turned into a really cool story. And so you have all that in the back of your head before you get there, and then you show up and then play the first hole, and you're hitting your approach shot into this first hole. It's a dogleg right, pretty wide open off the tee, and you're going to find your ball. That's a theme throughout the day. You're probably not going to lose any golf balls unless you hit one way off the planet or lose it in the fescue or something like that. But all of a sudden, this first iron shot that you have in is, you know, what looks like a pretty tame green, but if you miss it at all left, you have a literal man-made cliff. I mean, it's like, I don't know how far it drops down. It's 50 feet, 60 feet, something like that, but it's all completely man-made, and they use the dirt to push up all kinds of different things. And I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. And so I think it starts there and it just kind of continues through the round.
Incredible. And I think, again, I know we mentioned it already, but if you want to follow along while listening to this and you're not driving in your car, please go to friedegg.com because there's pictures of it and it shows the incredible, not just green complexes, but really just the overall changes in undulation, how they perched them up, built them up, and still to this day, it's incredible that there's a boxcar buried out there, but like, how did they even get it in place?
Right.
How many horses? What was the horsepower needed to get that bad boy out there?
I know, it's outrageous. It's a real a feat of engineering. Truly,
it's provocative, to say the least.
Provocative stuff.
When we talk about, like, you know, Wisconsin golf is so amazing, and this, I'm sure, way back in the day when they pulled the steam shovel out there and they're like, we are now using this for golf course architecture and building this site. How crazy people probably looked at them and they're like, what are these guys doing out there? It's the same thing that continues that we saw a couple weeks ago when we were up at Sand Valley and out at the Lido site. And you had front end loaders and some dozers out there operating off of GPS coordinates.
Right.
It's the Tesla of the Caterpillar industry. I don't even know, you know, really what was going on, but like self-driving. There's people in there. I understand. I don't want to get them in trouble, but self-driving bulldozers that were shaping an entire golf course just based off of a 3D rendering. It's absolutely incredible. And it's awesome to see that the Midwest is was at the cutting edge of design and building and still remains there this day.
Yeah, but no doubt.
Lawsonia, let's dive in. So you mentioned the rates. I'd say they probably have a somewhat shorter season than other places that we've discussed so far, but I'm sure that doesn't hold them back at all. So what was kind of the feeling that you got walking around there, not only from other people playing, but from Andy as well as the staff? I'm sure they're jacked up about it.
Yeah, extremely. And I was out there in May. It was kind of, it was a very nice day, but still early in the season, and it was slammed. I mean, it was absolutely slammed. They were just opening their other course, they did some work to the other course as well, which I didn't really get to see, but it was packed. I mean, it was absolutely packed, but it's one of those places too where I found it to be a pretty difficult golf course. Again, it's always interesting to play those places where it's a really tough golf course, but also I didn't lose a golf ball kind of a place, you know? And, but still like things move because you are constantly finding your ball and it's not like you're constantly reteeing or looking for balls all the time or anything like that. A lot of the challenge is around the greens, which, you know, fits with a lot of the golden age stuff. But I think one thing that's kind of built into that is it's a good lesson in why green expansion is such an interesting thing, because I think that, you know, especially playing it from a longer yardage, it was a really weird feeling to both have these massive, massive greens and keep missing them, despite the fact that you know, felt like you're actually hitting it pretty decent. And a lot of that is like the greens have expanded to almost give you this false sense of security on a lot of the holes where it's like, oh, you know, I can shade a little closer to that pin because, you know, look how much green I have to the left. But in reality, it's like this green is expanded in a way that has kind of just highlighted all these rolled edges that kind of feed the ball even further away from the hole and off the green. And I think that's such a more interesting test than, you know, I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but we just saw the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines last week, where if you miss the green by, you know, a foot in a lot of places, you're probably going to stay a foot away from the green in that ultra, ultra thick rough. Whereas at a place like Lawsonia, it was a lot of like, if you miss the green, even in the right spot on the green, you know, you might be on the green by 10 feet, but you're going to roll 20 yards, 30 yards off the green if you miss it in the wrong spot. And so playing it for the first time, I mean, I shot a billion because I just had no course knowledge, no real game plan whatsoever. I was kind of just like flying by the seat of my pants, trying to enjoy the shots and the views and all kinds of stuff. But I think if you went back and played again, I mean, the way to play it would be just as conservative as you possibly could, and just trying to like hold on for dear life, because there were, I mean, it was all day. It was balls rolling back to your feet, balls rolling, like, again, to use the Torrey Pines example, we saw the 13th hole, the par five there. The 13th hole at Lawsonia almost has kind of a similar, like approach kind of vibe, where if you are missing in the wrong spot, like legitimately, it might be rolling 60 feet back to your feet. And it's just, it's one of those like masochist, it's really fun if you like getting beat up by those types of things. You know, it's a really, really fun place to play, because you're kind of living on that edge all day. And that just was something I really, really enjoyed.
Scorecard wise, par 72 tips out at 68-53. I'm guessing you're going to tell me that it feels longer than that.
A lot longer than that. Yeah. And it does play pretty firm, I think, typically. Like I think the ball will roll out. The fairways are really big. The fairways are really canted in a lot of spots. So you are, if you're catching it on a downslope or something like that, like it's going to run out quite a bit, which we can get to in a minute too. But you're playing so uphill. Like we talked about them kind of using their steam shovels and their routing to their advantage, and really like making that kind of the way that the course is protected. And it just feels like you're hitting these, not all the time. I mean, there's a good variety. The holes like number 6 and 7, holes like number 2. I mean, you are hitting downhill into some of them, but I feel like some of the most demanding shots on the golf course are, you know, you just feel like you're hitting uphill constantly. The first long par 3 on the front, I don't know, is that number 4 or 5? It's just, there's a lot of shots where you're standing over, you're like, man, this is everything I got right here. And it might only be a, 200 yard shot, but it's playing 230, 240, something like that. And you've got, God, I can't imagine how, you mentioned the short season. One thing I was kind of laughing about with Andy out there was like, man, what a miserable, it's all relative, miserable if you're worried about your score. That is a miserable place to play golf in some of those like windy March.
Oh yeah.
March days where you're just like, all right, well, I think it's warm enough. Let's go. Season starts now type of day is like, God, you would get your ass kicked out there. If the wind was up, because there's nowhere to hide.
Right.
The trees are gone. It is super windswept. And like I said, you're going to find your ball. You're just probably not going to like where you find it.
So what's the most penalizing part of La Sonia?
I think for me, it was just missing in the wrong spots with your irons. Like if you're not paying attention to where you're missing, like you're going to be short-sighted. You're going to have these incredibly impossible up and downs. It was a place that turns par into bogey or double just extremely, extremely quickly, which is, if you're looking for a proper test of golf, I mean, that's the way to test people, I think, is, it's not a lot of like hit this shot or you're in the water, hit this shot or you're in the hay. It's a lot of like hit this shot here and you might be putting. And if you miss, good luck trying to get up and down. Like I played the first, the first 3, 4, 5 holes. Like I felt like I was actually like hitting it pretty nice. And all of a sudden I'm looking down, I'm like 4, 5, 6 over par. I'm just like, God, I don't even have a chance. But I know that sounds like, it wouldn't be a fun time, but it really was like, it's a really great challenge.
All right. Favorite hole.
Someone asked me this when we left and I know this is cheating, but I'll give two different answers. Favorite single hole, I think, was 13. That par 5 was just, we were into the wind and it felt like it was 900 yards long, but it was such a battle, and it uses like the land in such a cool way where you've got this, it's almost like a Great Hazard type thing where, you're kind of trying to decide like, all right, am I trying to clear the hazard with my second shot? Or am I trying to lay back behind the hazard with my second shot and like forcing the third shot, except there's no hazard. It's just a massive ravine. And so it's very like, you can hit a good drive. It's wide open. If you want to, if you want to take on the ravine and try to get over it or try to get as close to the hole as you possibly can, it's up to you basically to decide whether you want to lay back to 160, 170, something like that, and kind of be on the same level as the flag. Or if you want to hit it up there 90, 100 yards from the pin, but you're hitting from the bottom of this gully with your third, and you're hitting straight uphill, and if you're short, it's going to probably roll back to your feet. And it's just a really, really cool challenge. So that was probably my favorite hole, at least the one that kind of sticks with me the most, a couple months after playing it. But I think if I was going to give another fake made up award, I would give it to the whole stretch of 6, 7, and 8 is unbelievable. 6 is this long, it's probably, 450, 460, something like that. Straight, like pretty much straight downhill. But again, it's got just a wild fairway, totally crazy undulated fairway where you're never going to have an even lie. Like that's another thing I probably should have said about, when you asked what the biggest challenge was, a big part of it is distance control with your irons and making sure you're missing in the right spots with your irons. You're also doing that from a lot of uneven lies, which is really, really tough. It's a place where you're constantly trying like, all right, I got to stay right of this flag, except the ball is above my feet. And oh God, now I just hooked it left and I'm short-sighted type of thing. So 6 was a really wild fairway that you don't really know what kind of lie you're going to get hitting into this green, where I think I had 6 iron into the green, I remember, and it looks like this massive, massive green. Just looks like there's, couldn't be easier to just hit the center of this green. But it's one where you get up there and you realize, like with all the slopes and with all the runoffs and everything, you don't realize how small the green actually is, relatively speaking, like how much how much inhabitable space there actually is on the green. It's really small because everything's running off to the sides, almost has kind of like a turtleback feel to it. And things are running into bunkers. Things are running off the front. Things are running off the back. It's just, it's really cool. And then 7 is the par 3 that we mentioned, the boxcar par 3. Really just an awesome, gorgeous look. Almost has kind of like a Pine Valley type feel, almost like very, really cool bunkering in the front, and then kind of like this waste area up in the left, but just a really pretty, shot. I hooked it, I don't know, 70 yards left. I think actually I did lose that ball. That was maybe the only ball I didn't find. Just an absolutely awful shot. And a lot of that was because Andy's in my ear the whole time, just constantly like, oh man, you do not want to miss here. You do not want to miss here. You do not want to miss here. And so that's, I think kind of part of the challenge extrapolated out a little bit is you have those thoughts in your head constantly, just like, oh man, don't miss it here. Don't miss it here. Don't miss it here. And it just puts you on your back foot all day. So when you're asking kind of like, you know, I know that's kind of 3 or 4 different answers to like what the biggest challenges of the place, but they all kind of feed together, if that makes sense. Like you're standing there hitting these iron shots, and not only do you have an uneven lie, not only do you have a small space on the green to hit it, but you also have all these thoughts in your head of just like, oh man, if you miss it here, you're totally dead. And that's a tough, like that was a tough cocktail to balance the first time around. So, and then the last hole in that stretch of 6, 7, 8, number 8 is this short par 4. Again, there's like this awesome variety of holes as well. I know I'm kind of throwing every design cliche at you here, but like you never, ever, ever feel like you're hitting the same shot twice in a row. You never feel like you're playing the same hole twice in a row. Like you use every club, you do all those things that, you know, it is a walk with 18 very different challenges. You know, it's just awesome. Just a ton of variety. And 8 is kind of fits that short par 4 mold that you haven't really played yet, where it's another one of those ones that kind of puts you on your back foot. You know, I remember I pulled, I think 4 iron or 2 iron or something out. And just because it seems like one of those holes where it's like, all right, well, I've bogeyed the first 7 holes here. Like, what should I, let me try to play a little bit smarter. And then as soon as you start to do that, that was a good time where Andy kind of chimed in and was like, you know, if you just hit driver, like you've got plenty of room up there on the left. Like you can't see it. Like they do a great job of disguising it. And it looks like you want to lay back, but actually the layup is even harder than if you just go for it. And so there's all kinds of just really cool visual stuff. And I mean, God, it's the kind of place I feel like you'd have to play 10 times before you actually got it figured out. So that was both my favorite hole and my favorite stretch of holes.
What's the takeaway of La Sonia Links? Obviously you're smitten with the place.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me would be, I don't know if, I mean, Andy does a good job of explaining this too, but like, I don't know if I've ever seen a better value for public golf. I mean, it is the kind of place, like if it was a private club in Chicago or a private club on Long Island or something, I mean, it would be absolutely world renowned. It's that good. It is so cool. It checks every single box golf course wise that I think, you know, at least the ones that I've seen, a lot of the best courses in the world tend to check. The difference is that they make it extremely, you know, affordable for what it is. I mean, to play it for less than $100 is an absolute steal. And especially when you're looking at, you know, right, not necessarily right up the road, but a couple hours away, you know, a place like Whistling Straits, place like Erin Hills, I mean, are going to be a lot more expensive. And I think Erin Hills is a lot different golf course than Whistling Straits. I think that Erin Hills has a lot more La Sonia than it does Whistling Straits. But it's one of those places, man. If you're in the area, if one of those places has brought you to Wisconsin or Sand Valley as well, you mentioned, like if one of those places has brought you to Wisconsin, like go check it out because it is so worth it. I promise it'll be on the level of any of those other golf courses that you're going to play, and it will probably be cheaper as well. So if you can get there, you should really try to get there.
All right, La Sonia Links.
Enjoyed talking about it.
I mean, it sounds like an awesome. Next time we're up in Wisconsin, we knew this going up for Sand Valley. We just didn't have another day. We wanted to try to put it on the front end, but schedules never worked out. We've heard everybody raving about it. I'm so happy that you got up and had the opportunity to check it out. Now I'm just kicking myself even more, but I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see when we're up in September and maybe we go check out Lawsonia.
Would love to. Need to, I have a lot of unfinished business to go. I played like a complete jackass. I need to go play again.
You said you shot a billion. I didn't even want to ask what you shot.
I literally didn't. It was one of those, like, I don't even know if I added it up. I mean, it was miserable score-wise. Very fun, though.
Yeah, other people would say it's not about the score that you shoot. So
that's exactly right. That's what I would say as well.
Well, there you have it. Lawsonia Links. Deej, I appreciate the time, buddy.
Anytime.